First, there was a dream. Now, there is reality. Here, in the untainted cradle of the heavens.
Alive and well, I see. And still bungling in the dark.
By God, your offspring will return to Earth and shape it in their image.
You discharged her. So she and her accomplice came here to kill you. Then they set fire to the office to conceal the crime. But they were trapped in the elevator and perished in the flames.
But that means I would have to be
dead.
On their first day on Earth, they will be able to look up and know that there is law and order in the heavens.
Intuitive improvisation is the secret of genius.
Shandor?
Yes, sir.
Jaws. I'm assigning you the task of recovering the microfilm copy of the tracking system. Shandor, you will go with him. Obey him. Every person who even comes into contact with that microfilm is to be eliminated.
Look after Mr. Bond. See that some harm comes to him.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Odd Job Pod. We have been variously plotting in our global bases from the deepest confines of Surrey through to the hidden gems of Australia. We've been doing a global conspiracy, and we're now ready to present the next level of the Odd Job Pod. I am joined, as ever, by Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
It's been some time, but I think we're ready for a podcast of epic villainous proportions, I think you could say.
I sincerely hope so. We are continuing on our festival of Bond villainry.
Yeah.
And preparing for what we hope will be a World Cup of Bond villains at some point in the future, possibly the summer.
Mm. Who will dominate, do you think?
Who will see that some harm comes to us?
It's quite funny you say festival of villainry. I was actually watching, of all things, the Minions movie the other day, and they have something very similar in that of a festival of villainry. It's very fun. I can highly recommend it if you've got small children and want something which riffs off a load of supervillains. It's very entertaining. Anyway, we're not here to talk about children's cartoons and the Minions, good as that film is. We are here to talk about Bond villains. And as Terry said, we're leading up to a World Cup of Bond villains. And for this one, we're going to be discussing Ersatz Blofelds, which are villains who would have been Blofeld, probably, if they'd been in another timeline. So obviously can't be used as Blofelds for various legal reasons, but there's a few interesting ones in there. So, Terry, do you want to just announce to us who is in this pod of Ersatz Blofelds?
Well, we've got Carl Stromberg from The Spy Who Loved Me, and then Hugo Drax from Moonraker. And then we've got Max Zorin from A View to a Kill. And then finally we have Elliot Carver. I had actually forgotten his first name, Elliot Carver, played by Jonathan Pryce from Tomorrow Never Dies. Yeah, we might not get much mileage out of
it's
Carver.
It's such a memorable film, isn't it?
It is indeed a memorable film. But these are characters who I'm sure Bond fans listening to this will be aware that there were various licensing issues and legal reasons why Spectre and Blofeld couldn't be used in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s.
And the noughties as well.
And I mean, indeed
Dominic
the noughties.
Green would have been.
Well, I did think about sticking Dominic Green in there, but again, I felt that he was a bit, he was not really the head honcho. Head honcho, the capo de tutti, the top dog, the big cheese.
And we like big cheesy dogs here, don't we?
We do. Not in this room because it's very small.
Yes.
But I'm up for a big cheesy dog when we get out of this room.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah. Cheese dogs all around.
I can imagine for the room that you're recording in, the smell would probably be awful after a while with the big cheesy dogs.
It would cover up a multitude of sins, though.
So that's, I think that that's a good themic point with which to introduce our next round of Bond villains.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah. People might wonder where can we go next, but of course there are so many.
Well, they'll have to listen to more episodes.
Yeah, they will do. They will do. Yeah. Yeah, subscribe.
Exactly.
Get onto it.
Yeah. It's not like we've just started making them up to put them into pots or anything like the day beforehand.
No.
Heavens new.
Heavens forfeit.
This is not a hastily arranged list that we've just posted on a WhatsApp group.
No.
Who on earth do you think we are?
Yeah. I mean, what do listeners think we've been up to for all these months between podcasts? Yeah. All right. Gary's had
been
a
raising
child.
A family, yes. In fairness. Yeah. But the rest of us, no, we've been hard at it.
Yeah. Not as hard at it as Gary.
No. Evidently. Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. Back to the Bond villain.
It's much more fun doing these with beer, isn't it? The last few have been done in our mornings, and they've been great, My God, this is much more fun drinking beer and drinking Bond. Sorry, Gary. It's morning where Gary is.
It's quite all right. I've been aware for the last few pods that I've been the one drinking the beer, which has not been entirely fair. I could start over here. I mean, it is Australia.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, Governor.
Always,
Before we dive in, though, to the villains, very quickly, I just think it's worth sort of very quickly sort of discussing other villains that we considered putting into Ersatz Blofeld pod, but decided against for various reasons. And you mentioned Dominic Green, and there was two other villains we looked at potentially: Christatos from For Your Eyes Only, and Kamal Khan from Octopussy. And I think actually you could probably start putting all those into a pot, which is just kind of near villains, but kind of very high level stooges, if you want, in there.
I think exactly that, Gary. I think you're right there. These are guys who are operating for some unseen hand. They're a bit like number two from Thunderball. Maybe that's an extra pot that we've got coming towards us.
Mm, yes.
Or a bit like Dr. No, perhaps.
Yes, indeed. I mean, I looked at Largo and Dr. No.
Yeah.
And then, yes, although I didn't consider them to be using the same language that you did, but yes, ultimately they are. They are kind of stooges for the Hidden Hand, as of yet to be revealed. And certainly Kamal Khan fulfills that, although obviously it's a difficult one with Kamal Khan because he is a kind of initially a hidden hand to Octopussy, but as it turns out, he's actually a partner with General Orloff.
Mm.
And we could go into Bond villain partnerships as well. Kamal Khan and Orloff. We could talk about Brad Whitaker and General Koskov. And then we could talk about Electra King and Renard.
Yes, certainly.
But all of these things for another podcast. But this is our rationale, listeners.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Just in case because there's always going to be somebody out there who goes, well, why didn't you group them together? Because I put them there. So that's like a rationale. It's almost like you've kind of got a singles match and a doubles match, the matchup that you just mentioned there, Terry.
Yes.
It's a doubles partnership and a singles partnership. Singles, obviously, is the much tougher one to win in there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's heightened.
Yeah, I mean, look, what would Borg McEnroe be if it was Borg versus McEnroe and Peter Fleming, eh? It just wouldn't make sense, would it?
I reckon no. Borg would have had McEnroe and Fleming together. No way.
Do you reckon?
Yeah.
So?
He was nailed. Yeah,
that totally
should have happened.
That's probably going to be the sequel to that film, isn't it?
That film with them in it. Yeah.
With where they play tennis and that.
That's what I'm getting them confused with it anyway. We should move on and talk about James Bond.
Okay.
Yes. Okay, well, so our Bond villains that we want to discuss are Stromberg, Drax, Zorin, and Carver. Now, let's start with the obvious ones. And actually, in my mind, and obviously they're very different, but because I think the films are so closely linked, I've always kind of just put Stromberg and Drax together because I think there's an awful lot of similarities between them. For me, Moonraker is not a wildly dissimilar script film characterization from Spy Who Loved Me. Just takes it from underwater to into space, but there are kind of differences. And for me, Graham, whilst I, you know my feelings, I'm not a massive fan of either of the films per se, but I am a massive fan of the villains because I think you need a good, strong, unhinged megalomaniac, and I don't think you can get much more unhinged megalomaniacs than Stromberg and Drax.
Well, they're both... Well, the filmic versions of them are both the inventions of Christopher Wood.
Yes.
Who wrote the screenplay for both those films.
Yes.
So it's his interpretation. Stromberg, of course, is a brand new character.
Mm.
And he's the first main character who's actually invented by for the films, isn't he? I mean, he doesn't exist in the book. The Spy Who Loved Me. The Spy Who Loved Me is radically different to the film. The Spy Who Loved Me is very low key. It's set in a hotel. The only surviving characters apart from Bond is Jaws. Actually, Jaws is in that film, but he's a completely. I mean, him and the other assassin. Are that's basically the hitmen for the mob, and Bond accidentally falls upon this situation, and Bond action ensues. Yeah, and this is Bond in it's actually written from another character's perspective, that book as well. It's a completely different. It's when Fleming goes out on the limb a bit, but Stromberg is of course nowhere near this story. So Stromberg is someone who is completely invented. He's a brand new character, but of course he's not a brand new character because he is based on everything that has gone so well in the previous Bond films.
Yes, he's every Bond villain trope wrapped into one. Single character.
Exactly. I mean, he's got the funny hands. He could be Dr. No, couldn't he?
He could be Dr. No.
Yeah. He's got the big lair. Mm-hmm. You know, he could be Blofeld. He's perhaps a mash of all the Blofeld villains.
Mm.
I suppose we're meant to feel that he's perhaps one of the guys from Spectre who has been like left out in the lurch now that Blofeld's gone, and perhaps there's a power vacuum going on there. If you're like us and you read far too much into these stories,
yes.
And not just assume that he's just meant to be someone there who is meant to be the big bad in this film that you've got to go and kill with his webby hands.
With his webby hands and his unwillingness to shake hands with you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's called Carl.
And he's called Carl as well. Yeah, you can't trust people.
Yeah, it's obvious wrong. And then you've got Drax. Drax is obviously another one in the same role. But Drax does exist. Drax is someone who is named after one of Fleming's friends.
Yeah.
So I forget the name of him now, but he's
based on Hugo Drax or Hugger Drax from the Moonraker novel.
Yeah.
Which is a radical. Yeah, this movie is a big departure from
a very complex movie. Character though.
Yes,
and he's not like he's. There are similarities to Blofeld, but he exists before Blofeld, doesn't he? I think.
I think he. Yeah, Moonraker is one of the early novels. Yeah,
he is actually perhaps a prototype, of Blofeld. So perhaps in the scheme outside of the movies, we're probably thinking that Drax actually is perhaps a prototype Blofeld.
Mm.
With his dubious past and everything, and the fact that he's faking it, and like you can't trust him, and things like that.
Cheats at cards,
everything, basically. Yes. Cheats at life. This is a former Nazi, isn't it?
Yeah. And
if this is one of the things about Moonraker, it forgets all of that, and there's all he really cheats at is playing the piano, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's intentionally cheating. I think that's just bad filmmaking. I think that.
No, he does. There is something that you see where he's actually, because they actually do have a shot of him just prancing his fingers around on the top, and it is meant to show that he's not actually playing the piano at all.
Right. So I must have seen that film at least a million times. And I've never picked up on that.
No, you should have a look at it again.
I'm going to go home and watch it.
Have a look at it again with those eyes.
I'm going to go home and watch it.
Yeah, and now you see what a fake and a phony you really are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go, you just cannot trust a man who looks like he's playing the piano at all. I mean, it probably puts an awful lot of musical careers from the last couple of decades into stark relief as well. You know, plenty of people that you couldn't really trust off the back of that. Yeah. Anyway.
Gary Barlow,
Easy.
Yeah.
Gary's got lawyers. You mean super talented?
He's got accountants too.
Gary he has connections high up as well. I mean, you know, once managed to commandeer, you know, the mall outside Buckingham Palace. So think where he could go next.
Yeah.
He knows Danny Boyle, don't you know?
Yeah, he's not Sir Gary Barlow yet for a reason, though.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when you look at both of them, you, as you say, you've got Drax who... He's not really sort of much like the Drax in the books, and you've got Stromberg, which is an artificial creation. Stromberg, I like the way you put it in that he's an amalgamation of everything Bond villainy into one, whereas Drax, he's definitely your archetypal, very classic Bond villain, but they've not tried to shoehorn too much of various other Bonds in there, other than perhaps the sort of, yeah, I think there's a nice for me sort of link back to You Only Live Twice. There feels like a few bits and pieces that kind of link in there in terms of, you know, lair, grand scheme. Obviously, you know, you don't get really much grander than space into there. But for me, I think actually, in terms of the villains, a lot with any villain obviously rests on the performance. And I think you've got two cracking performances. I actually marginally prefer, as a villain, I think Michael Lonsdale does a fantastic job as Hugo Drax. I think he is, regardless of what you think of the film, and I know, you know, some people like me, not massive fans, you guys obviously love it, but you cannot take anything away from his performance in there. It's intense. It's just villainous. He's having an absolute ball, and from the minute he steps onto screen, you just got your skin starts crawling a little bit in there. So I don't know how you feel, but you know, you obviously Kurt Jurgens did a brilliant job as Stromberg as well. But I almost felt that Drax had a little, or Michael Lonsdale, because he comes after Kurt Jurgens, whose villain is just sort of so epic and sort of quite unhinged, that he could have gone either one of two ways. He could have gone, you know, even more epic, even more hamming up, and there's still a fair bit of ham in there, let's be fair. But he's almost got that sort of pared back, slightly unsettling intensity of just, there's a few points where he just looks and you go, this is somebody who probably would order somebody to snap your neck while he's just casually making a coffee in the background.
Well, I mean, Drax snaps his fingers, doesn't he? And to order death. There's an element of savagery about Drax and the way that he executes the people who betray him that Stromberg didn't have. Interestingly, they're both quite understated characters. The actors played them in a very understated way. They're not terribly demonstrative as characters in terms of the way that they move their bodies around. And indeed, they're quite understated in terms of their dialogue, I would say. It's their actions that tend to be quite extremely violent and, of course, very, very villainous in terms of the scale of their ambitions, their intentions, what their plans are truly villainous. I mean, they're nothing short than the almost complete destruction of humanity. But also there's that kind of interpersonal violence streak that they both have. But Drax, I think, pulls it off better for two reasons. I think firstly, because Lonsdale, I agree, is got a handle on that kind of villainy better than I think Kurt Jurgens did. Kurt Jurgens, a marvellous act, was a marvellous actor in his own right. But I think that there was a certain understatedness about Drax that I think worked really, really well. He got some killer dialogue. The whole, look after Mr. Bond, see that some harm comes to him, is a difficult line to do because it's incredibly cheesy.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think he makes it work extremely well. And I mean, when he orders the death by dogs of Corinne Dufour, it's an absolute savage execution, it has to be said. He just snaps his fingers, and which is a nice... Does he snap his fingers? No, he snaps his fingers when he's getting those Dobermans to eat the meat, isn't he?
Yeah.
But he kind of, you know, but it's very evident that he's, you know, silently ordering, you know, the execution of one of his employees in this manner. And I think that he handles it with a degree of more panache than I think Jurgens did. Jurgens kind of blew up those guys in that helicopter and then fed that woman to the shark.
Yeah.
And that just seems a little bit... cheesier. Nothing to do with the actor, no. Just the situations that I think that were created.
No, it is one of the things about Moonraker that stands apart, that scene where she gets eaten by dogs. It is such a savage moment in that film, and it's filmed beautifully, and it's done beautifully as well. And it really is shocking in a film that is largely played for laughs.
Yes, yeah.
But there is this massive juxtapose there with that one scene.
Mm.
But it is, it's very French actually. It's a lot like those sort of films from the 60s and 70s. Very, very dark. But darkly comic almost.
Mm.
Not in funny way. You shouldn't derive any pleasure from it. But it does. It's almost satirical on the misogyny that you see in Bond films. This whole power of men over women, that women are just the prey there, and she literally does become prey.
Yes. Here. Yeah.
And this is what Bond does in every film. So there's a touch of the almost the belle de jour about this, when the servants are basically having their way with the mistress of the house.
Yeah, and then leaving them to be eaten alive, so to speak, No, it's an interesting symbolism going on there.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought of it like that. It does make me feel slightly better about the misogyny in James Bond films in general.
Yeah.
But yes, I don't think it necessarily excuses it.
They probably didn't think into it that much. No, they just probably wanted an amusing death for her.
But I mean, I think, Gary, your preference for Michael Lonsdale is also based upon your love of the movie The Day of the Jackal, for which is a star and is a magnificent movie as well. So, I mean, he's got that kind of pedigree. Whenever I think of Kurt Jurgens, I tend to think of The Longest Day, or just like a whole slew of movies where war movies where
he is the overgrouping Führer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
he's the guy that Wolf Kahler ended up becoming. Sort of like, you know, if Kurt Jurgens had been 20 years younger, he'd have been in Raiders of the Lost Ark. You know. Although, in fairness, that's actually that movie wasn't that long after.
No, not really. There's only four or five years, isn't it?
Would have been fascinating to see him in that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been quite brilliant. And I think perhaps, I mean, it's interesting because when you start getting into that kind of villainry, and I think that's still true even for modern-day villains, the casting of them is really critical, kind of brings a little bit of kind of thought behind it. And there's kind of, the minute you have a villain cast, you have an awful lot of, they bring with them an awful lot of kind of subtext, baggage, narrative that, regardless of how they play, you've already sort of got the type of person in your mind. And it's not often that you can play against type in that. You know, if you think about, you know, the minute that you heard Mads Mikkelsen was going to be the villain in Casino Royale, I think we already went, okay, we know what's going to come up with that. And, you know, he's almost somebody that you have written down as a potential villain. Again, with Christoph Waltz, you know, being named as Blofeld, and I know that we talked Blofeld in the last pod, but you think of his performance in something like Django Unchained, for example, and Inglourious Basterds, and again he brings that in there, so you can immediately kind of see. And there's not many films that kind of, I think, really make a conscious effort to play against type, or some do very obtusely and deliberately try to do it. There's not too many films that I think are quite successful with kind of casting against type. The only one that I can kind of possibly think is Robert Redford's casting in Captain America, which was kind of quite against type and played very, very well. But back to Bond.
Well, I think if you could go back to Henry Fonda
in Once Upon a Time in the West.
Yes.
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 Yeah. Which is the ultimate example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not entirely aware of Michael Lonsdale's oeuvre, his entire oeuvre. I'm only aware of his English language stuff. But I get the impression that he's played a number of different characters, and I'm sure he may well have played some wrong ones in his time. So, and I think that's why I think I prefer Lonsdale's Ayrshout to Blofeld as opposed to Jurgens, is because I think he has that depth. I think he's just a better actor. But I also think it's because he has a little bit more to do.
Mm. No, I think he would have made a great Blofeld. I think that's the important thing you've got to do about all of these characters that we're gonna talk about today is the fact that how would they have looked in the Nehru collar, basically.
Drax kind of does have a Nehru collar, doesn't he? Really,
does kind of. Yeah,
it's in that direction, isn't it?
Yeah, and even Stromberg, sort of the black smock type affair.
And he's got kind of got a shiny affair going on as well, doesn't he? Yeah. So I mean, these guys are clearly they are supposed to be Blofelds. They're sort of like sitting there going, "Oh man, I wish we could have used Blofeld." But these guys are great. But wouldn't they be brilliant if they were Blofeld?
Yeah. Well, I wonder what they look like in drag.
Google's Michael Lonsdale in drag.
Yes.
It's almost like you need some kind of drag engine for Bond fans where you can just drop any villain in and just go, how does it compare to Charles Grey?
It's got to be like a Snapchat filter thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like that sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got Snapchat on my phone. I could
just do it right now.
I've gone on my airplane mode, so I can't check it.
So you can't just do that. Wouldn't it just put that on you? Put the Charles Grey drag face on you, and you could just do it with your selfies there.
It would. Yeah. Listeners, if it's there, I'll post a few. If you follow me on Snapchat, which none of you do,
no, because we're old enough to know better. That's why.
Yeah. Well, yes, indeed, quite.
And I was going to say, if anybody actually from Snapchat happens to be listening, please do go ahead and make the Charles Grey drag filter. I think it's what the world is crying out for at this point in time. You know what, though? When you talk about sort of people who you can naturally see as being Blofeld, and I think, you know, Jurgens and Lonsdale both sort of fall into that. I'm not so sure I could ever see Christopher Walken being anybody other than Christopher Walken.
Well, let's have a look, because Christoph Waltz made a pretty good stab at Blofeld, didn't he?
Yeah, under difficult circumstances.
And you know what? I think, you know, you've got to look. These two actors, Christopher Walken, Christoph Waltz, both brought in by Tarantino into films with real powerful effect.
Yes.
And I think, and they've been used in Bond films. All right, but Tarantino used Walken after Bond he'd been in Bond, and Waltz was in Bond after he'd been in a Tarantino film. But I think you can see those characters who can bring something completely different. Oh, like I know Terry, you've got problems with Christoph Waltz's Blofeld.
I share
those, but perhaps not
with the actor.
Not with the actor, no. Definitely not with the actor.
I think Christoph Waltz is... I heard that he was going to be in Spectre, I was so happy.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of partly hoped that he wouldn't be Blofeld because I wanted Blofeld to not come straight back. Yeah. But that was wishful thinking. But, I mean, I think he's a marvellous actor and by rights should be an excellent Blofeld. I hope for the record he gets another chance at it.
Mm.
But I think that Christopher Walken would have been a superb Blofeld. I mean, he wasn't written to be Blofeld. He was written to be Zorin.
A cloned Blofeld. Wow.
Well, there's a thought.
Wow.
Now, there's a thought.
Whoa.
I hadn't thought of it like that. Yeah. Yeah, I wonder what he looks like in drag.
Yeah, because let's face it, I mean, like that—that's what Zorin is. Is he that whole sort of boys from Brazil thing? He is this whole sort of like there's the evil Nazi there.
He's a distilled evil, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's been put in to a test tube and turned into a person.
And brought out in a coke-fueled 80s.
I know. And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
I think that's what these discussions that we're having are. We're going down a kind of imaginary route where there was no lawsuit with Kevin McClory and the Bond films continued with Spectre and that these characters... may well have become Blofeld, but that Blofeld, like Bond, changed and adjusted with the times and reflected the times.
Bond always changes with the times, doesn't he?
But with different actors.
Let's face it. I mean, Zorin really is Scarface you can take your kids to, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, yes. That's a great way of putting it. And I think the other key sort of thing that you picked up on is the fact that I don't think Zorin as a character could exist anywhere other than the 80s. He is just...
Oh, he's one totally that. Yeah, exactly.
Ultimate 80s villains.
It's a 1985 film for a reason. It's right in the middle, isn't it?
Absolutely,
And to be honest, I wouldn't want him existing anywhere other than the 80s either. It's just... Yeah, I think you could kind of see perhaps Moonraker, maybe less so Spy Love Me, but definitely Moonraker sort of working in a slightly different era. But my God, View to a Kill, it's all for me. I think the whole film as a whole is up there with the worst and the best simultaneously at the same time. There's no in between. It's both dreadful and utterly, utterly brilliant. And
I don't think you get anything less from Moore, do you, in all those films? that's why people who don't like Moore as Bond, you know, they're just not trying. They really are not trying, because like they just hold on to this, because trust us, if you see it through, and if you just say I'm enjoying this, all of a sudden you'll see it on completely different levels.
Well, I'm thinking about Zorin. I think about that movie. I'm also thinking about Dr. Karl Mortner.
Yeah,
and I'm wondering whether or not actually in a different universe, he is actually Blofeld, and Zorin is his. Well, I won't say his son, but there's clearly a kind of paternal thing going on. But there isn't is his creation.
Morton is there as the person who has lost his powers because through age. And,
yes, that's right. So he's kind of like old Blofeld.
Oh man!
And he's created Zorin in his own image.
I can totally get.
I can totally get behind that too. I mean, I'd like to see a film about that. I'd like to see a Vutical remade. That would be just the best.
That is.
No, I don't. Maybe not. But no. But I certainly think that I would like those themes to be revisited.
I reimagine
now that we've got Blofeld back.
Yeah,
completely. I think. I mean, it's the whole sort of element of Zorin is just so over the top. There's an awful lot that's going on behind the scenes there as well, and it's not just kind of unhinged villainy. There is an awful. I mean, you can't get with an actor like Christopher Walken anything other than the kind of levels of nuance and menace, but also dialed up when he wants to about 10 in there. And I think, you know, whenever we come to the World Cup of Bonds, I think Zorin will be Bond villains. Zorin will be very high up there. I can imagine a strong performance just because, like, you put Christopher Walken on any film and immediately, doesn't matter how bad the film is, immediately you've just gone, oh, it's not Christopher Walken. It's going to be brilliant. And just, if anybody was born to play a Bond villain, for me, he is. And he's also helped, and I think this is kind of something that we alluded to as well, especially with Christoph Waltz's Blofeld. He's helped with a script which brings the best out of him.
Mm.
Whereas some Bond villains, you can have brilliant casting, but the script doesn't quite do them any favours. Drax, it does brilliant favours. I think Stromberg, it's up and down a little bit. There's bits which really place Kurt Jurgens are strengthened, bits that don't. But every bit of that script, I think, completely plays to Christopher Walken's strengths. And it is probably because, and as we've discussed many times before, the producers clearly knew that this Moore was really past it. And let's focus on, we've got two great, actors in here, or two great characters, one with Christopher Walken, then we've got Grace Jones in. Let's focus on them because they are going to have a lot of fun on screen.
Well, I always think of with Moore and Walken on screen together, and it's completely unfair comparison, but it, like Savalas and Lazenby on screen together.
Mm.
The director knows what to do. The director knows where all the key things are going to come from, and they're not going to come from your Bond. They're going to come from your guest star. This is the guy who is filling the screen. This is the guy who is leading this film along.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I couldn't agree with you more. The sequence, you know, towards the climax of the movie in the mines, you know, when he, you know, just like mows down his own workforce. And that this is probably your Scarface reference you're thinking about there, where he exemplifies that kind of time. I mean, and again, it's always, we've talked about this a lot on the Odd Job Pod about how James Bond capturing the zeitgeist, and this is what he did, and it was superb casting. I agree, Gary, the script is absolutely perfect for him. They must have absolutely been so happy that they got him. And he does it so well.
Time for him as well.
Yeah, and it is, he's walking in his absolute pomp as well.
Yeah, I mean, the only guy that they probably could have got at that time is probably Rutger Hauer or something like that.
Right. Yeah, that would have been awesome. In fairness, yeah, that would have been awesome. Yeah.
That's got many different
right.
thoughts.
Let's make a note of have we done. Have we done a podcast on actors that should have played Bond?
No, because we did people who should play Bond.
Yes, but we haven't done that. Okay, villains. So we need to do that. We'll
do
that
soon. Some research on that.
Yeah, we need to do some research on that. That would be amazing. Yeah.
I mean, I think we don't need to go too much further on that, but just, you know, any listener who suddenly goes, Rutger Hauer's Bond villain, places you could go with that.
Listeners, get in touch on the socials and tell us who you think would have made amazing James Bond villains, because then we can carry that forward into a future podcast, by all means. Give us your content, listeners.
Ones who would have been Blofeld and ones who shouldn't have been Blofeld, but there would have been...
Yes, all of that. Wallow in your own crapulence.
Exactly.
Have licensed listeners to indulge us.
Or you will fall into a pit of our own crapulence.
So we could spend ages eulogizing Christopher Walken for his marvelous performance in View to a Kill, and I think, you know, we've obviously talked about this film an awful lot, but there's a lot that's not very good about it. As you say, if you just enjoy it, you really enjoy it.
I mean, he's right.
And, he is right. Yes.
It's terrible and brilliant at the same time.
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it is.
Okay.
It's one of my favourite films. And I think, despite the fact it has many elements of just being utterly dreadful.
You see, here's the thing, because you say it's one of your favourite films, and yet you don't like Moonraker. And yet, for me, that movie is just as absurd.
I
think I might have been hoisted by my own cracky petard.
There is no logic when it comes to tasting James Bond.
No, there isn't. And that's what every listener of this podcast will know.
Knows implicitly, yeah. Otherwise, we just wouldn't watch them. I mean, we just genuinely wouldn't watch them. And we certainly wouldn't listen to podcasts about them.
Oh, for heavens above, no. The final villain that we're going to come to when we talk about actors who are born to play Bond villains, I think when you go from Max Zorin to Elliot Carver, you suddenly hit a little bit of because I have a theory, which I will come to in a little bit, that actually I think Carver has the potential to be a fantastic villain, but... I think he's slightly out of time, actually. He in a different era, I think you could have a very interesting play around with that. I'll come to that in a little bit. But in terms of the villain itself, Terry, I don't know how you feel, but I think there's two main problems with Elliot Carver. One is the writing, and two is Jonathan Pryce.
Yes.
Who is a good actor, really good actor. But when you suddenly put them both together, when you talk about sort of essentials for Bond villains, one is the right actor and one is the right writing. And it pains me to say Tomorrow Never Dies has neither, because I think there's a lot of places you could go with Carver.
Well, I mean, let me just say from the outset that Tomorrow Never Dies is a movie that I enjoy.
Yes.
And I'm not afraid to say that I enjoy that. But one of the things that I enjoy less about it is Jonathan Pryce's acting. I think the thing to point out about Tomorrow Never Dies is that GoldenEye was massively successful, and they won. And it had been so long since they'd had a James Bond film from before GoldenEye that they were anxious to crack on and do another one.
Yeah,
and I think that it shows.
They make a lot of the time, don't
they? Yeah, and
this is one of those. This is a Man with a Golden Gun. This is a Quantum of Solace.
Exactly.
Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It is something they brought out.
That is exactly
immediately afterwards with disastrous effects.
I think actually they've learned their lesson.
Yes,
since Quantum of Solace, I think they've learned their lesson. So that you can't
took a long
rush this
time
shit.
For them to learn that lesson.
Yeah, well, 50 years.
Yeah,
to learn that lesson. this one. And I think that they, when they were coming up with the character of Carver, they looked at the whole kind of media ownership thing and cross-media ownership thing and saw its tremendous potential for supervillainry.
Mm.
Because, I mean, we live in an age, and particularly in the 90s, it's always been the case, but I think in the 90s we were becoming aware culturally that corporate entities were like Bond villains and behaved like Bond villains, and they looked at guys like, media moguls with the initials of R and M, and you can take your pick, and the way that they behave and the way they go about things, and thinking this is fertile ground for Bond villains. But
certainly,
but what they did was they just went back to an old trope.
Yeah.
Of Bond villainry that goes back 20, 30 years, and it just didn't ring hollow. And sadly, I don't think Jonathan Pryce probably got his head round the character because it was a bit of a naff character. He is a superb actor, Jonathan Pryce. I'm sure everything else I've seen him in, he's been brilliant at. And also, he's a noted actor of the stage as well.
Well, let's think of some of the best things that we've seen him in.
Mm.
So even in cameo appearances as a stooge in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes, of course.
Brazil?
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah, I don't think we need to go on.
This is the man's pedigree.
We don't need to go on. These are two amazing films.
It's not his fault that Elliot Carver is a shit villain.
No, not at all. Gary, I'm going to put this to you. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot about Robert Maxwell. About Elliot Carver in this film, and they say about the fact that he falls off the yacht at the end. That's the cheap laugh they get at the end. But do you think though that they thought that the producers thought, hang on, we might be taking the piss out of Digger Murdoch a bit too much, and if he doesn't like this, we're toast.
Hmm.
I think there is definitely an element of that in there. And I think you can kind of... I think that's one of the things that disappoints me a little bit about Carver is that they don't... One, his villainy is really played up too much. And I think, Terry, you're completely right. I don't think Jonathan Pryce quite got his head around the character. And I don't think the writers quite got their head around the character. And I think he does... They pull punches. Which is very rare for a Bond villain. To when you're sort of up at that level and you've got that your main antagonist, they pull the punches in there. One thing that I did have, and I probably overthought this an awful lot, but actually, I think Carver would be a much better villain if he was done today, because you look at the kind of environment that you've got around at the moment. You know, somebody like Alexander Nix from Cambridge Analytica, I think would have been almost a perfect for a villain. You look at Mercer as well. You've got a lot of these kind of, cyber terrorist shadowy hands that you could quite easily see spinning out nicely into a Bond villain. And actually, I think if you took Carver from Tomorrow Never Dies and kind of gave him a little bit of a 2018 twist in there, actually, and you could got wonderful bits. You could then start linking back to Russia and everything in there. It'd be marvelous. Actually, I think if you wrote Tomorrow Never Dies now and it was remade today, I think you would get a much better film and a much better villain and a much stronger villain, because actually a lot of the kind of talk in there at the time is like, oh, ha, ha, look how much people manipulate the world into war just using a few weapons. Well, that would never happen, would it? It's a bit over the top. And suddenly today you go, that could happen. And I think that's such fertile ground. If you remade that film today, I'd love to see that. I think it would be a fascinating film and a fascinating villain to expand on.
I would not be remotely surprised if that's an area that they choose to mine, actually, for the next Bond film.
Yeah, if you think that the producers will go back onto old ideas and reshape them into new ones, I don't know. Is there any precedent for that?
I'm struggling to think of when there wasn't a precedent for that, actually. Yes. Yeah, no, I think the next Bond movie is going to be sort of like has got an awful lot of fertile ground to delve into, hasn't it? With Trump and with Cambridge Analytica and fake news and all of that, and of course the hidden hand of the Russians.
But
there's lots of parallels.
But does that make a good action film though?
Well,
that is the problem, because you end up having to get in a henchman to do all the action scenes, because you can't have your Bond fighting John Price, because just face it, I mean, like,
it's a poor match.
It's like when Jason Statham had a fight with Poirot, isn't it? It doesn't make a good end to a film, does it?
No.
And if you haven't seen Heist, then, you know, it's...
Then you'll live. If you haven't seen Heist, you'll live. Yeah.
Although, I'll point out a couple of potential the exceptions that I think were kind of, one within the Bond franchise and one without the Bond franchise. You actually look at From Russia with Love, there's a lot of Hidden Hand, and that's a wonderfully classic spy movie. And you can have great spy movies I think it would become a spy movie rather than an action movie, which when Bond does go into that spy element, it really works well. The other thing, which is on a completely other end, when you talk about sort of casting of main villains and slightly unusual main villains, I watched Wonder Woman the other day for the first time, and David Thewlis as the main antagonist, as basically the God of War, is a utterly insane but brilliant piece of casting. So, get away with it. But although he does been able then with a lot of CGI.
Yeah, I was going to say he's back with some serious CGI.
But then again, I mean, I'd only ever seen him before in the third season of Fargo. And for God's sake, he scared the crap out of anyone who watched that series. He was brilliant in that, wasn't he?
I've not seen that. Yeah. So,
You have a treat.
I haven't even got through the second season of Fargo yet. So,
have you seen the third season of Fargo, Gary?
I'm starting watching it at the moment, and it's good. Yeah, it's very good.
It is. It's unsettlingly good.
Yeah.
All that Fargo stuff is good.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you've also got, he was in Harry Potter as well, which is where probably most people who are watching Wonder Woman now would probably have recognised him from. Although, again, he has a... But yeah, I mean, back to kind of the point. Actually, I think you can have a good action film with that kind of hidden hand behind it. There's, as I say, From Russia with Love's a good precedent. And I'd also, to a certain extent, argue that Spectre is as well, because Volt doesn't actually do much other than sit there and manipulate, and probably more so than all the other ones.
Mm.
And yet you're left of Dave Pastuta's henchman to do most of the action. And my God, that was a brilliant decision, because any scene he's in, any action bit within there, Spectre is problematic for me. It's up and down a bit. It's not one of my favourites. But the bits with Dave Bautista in are just incredible.
Talk of a return.
Well, yeah.
But, I mean, like that. I mean, like, he totally didn't die.
No, of course
I've
not.
I've seen villains come back to life from worse things than just a twisted neck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, he just fell over, twisted his neck.
He fell off a train. Yeah. Bond's fallen off loads of trains.
Yeah, falling off a train. Pa. That is not death in the Bond universe.
Unless you poke a stick at the body a few times and nothing happens. That guy's dead.
This guy, he's actually dead. But no, unless you see the body,
a Bond
villain is never dead.
Exactly.
So I really hope that they do bring him back, because he was awesome. But Dave Bautista is just an awesome guy.
So. Yes. Yeah.
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 Totally.
Yeah,
he'll probably come back to the Scar. He'd be more awesome.
That would be even more awesome. Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll have some kind of like big scar across his neck or something like that.
And then they'll explain, actually, this didn't happen when I fell off the train. This was actually another incident, which is completely embarrassing. I don't know, you wouldn't believe it, but I had an allergic reaction to something.
Went into anaphylactic shock.
Yeah, and it was terrible. And I had to wait quarter of an hour for an ambulance. It was terrible. And my head ballooned three times its normal size. And it was just because I had an apricot. I'd never eaten apricot in my life. And you know why? And I'd been avoiding them. There must have been something subconscious, because it just happened. And then, anyway, true story.
Mm.
You know what's really interesting? That we've started talking about Carver, and then we've probably spent the last 10 minutes talking about anything but Elgin Carver.
Yes. I mean, I think that tells you something about
that. We were embellishing.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is a shame, because like you, I think I think there's a lot to like about Tomorrow Never Dies. There's a lot to like about where they could have gone with it. It's and in another universe, that would have been the perfect Blofeld. And you could see that where they were trying to put the Blofelds in, can't you, Terry?
Absolutely. This is why this podcast exists. This episode exists. These are clearly supervillains who owe a great deal to Blofeld, and indeed, maybe in different times, may have actually been Blofeld. But yeah, I think of the, all of them, Carver is probably the weakest of them, but only that's because it was just, generally speaking, an ill-conceived idea and hastily done. I mean, for me, I think if you wanted to pick the best, then I'd say it's really a toss-up between Drax and Zorin.
It's difficult because they're such different
characters.
They
are different, yeah.
So we should just enjoy them for what they are.
Yeah, I mean, Drax is more of your classic Bond, 60s-style Bond villain.
Yeah.
I mean, he is 1970s, but, I mean, like, it's still very much harkening back to Donald Pleasance, you know, kind of, you know, classic.
Certainly, yeah.
You know, sort of like sitting in a big chair, controlling shit, you know.
Yeah.
Whereas Zorin is much more of a hands-on kind of villain, you know.
I think the difference between them is that Drax is sails very, very, very close to parody.
Mm.
This is the problem with that era of Bond, is that it is that close to parody that for some people it does bleed over.
Yeah, no, there's definitely elements of Dr. Evil in Drax.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. But Zorin is genuinely evil.
Mm.
There is genuine evil there.
Yeah.
And the fact that he has this sort of like manic grin on his face for the majority of the film, the fact that he is in total control about the whole thing, that he is, and he is of his time. He's captured the zeitgeist is there, and it's hanging around him.
No, I think Zorin wins the day in that respect, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that should be no surprise to anyone who's ever listened to this podcast regularly. I mean, Zorin, I think we've frequently mentioned as being one of the greatest James Bond villains, and obviously, you know, not coincidentally, paid by one of the best actors to ever appear in a James Bond film.
But do you need to be someone of the 80s to appreciate that, though?
Probably, yes. This is very much devastatingly from our perspective.
Yeah.
I think younger James Bond fans, were they foolish enough to be listening to this, would take an entirely different view. Yeah, completely. Because they've got different cultural reference points.
Yeah.
Massively so, yeah. But I mean, I would say is possibly to, you know, wherever possible to look at these things through a different filter, if you possibly can, then you can understand at least where we're coming from.
Yeah.
We certainly wouldn't expect you to agree with that.
Hey, this is why, one of the reasons why podcasts like this exist.
Yes.
So you can see things through a different filter.
Exactly, yeah.
Exactly. Change your perspective, and, you know, somebody might look through a filter and actually think that Die Another Day is a good movie. Who knows?
That's going to be some filter.
Man alive.
What kind of filter is that?
I'm not sure I even want to listen to that podcast. I mean, how long is that podcast going to be?
I mean, well, anywhere between about 2 minutes to much.
I want to hope that there is some coke-fueled Texan who's going to like be screaming down a microphone for 3 hours telling me how good that film is, and every time I have a doubt, he almost instinctively like leaps to something. I know what you're thinking here. and he's gonna be and I'm gonna be just like sat in my chair, like with my headphones on, hands over my headphones, going, I just have to listen to what he's got to say next.
If he exists, we should tweet that guy and say, okay, who wins in a fight? Die Another Day or Diamonds Are Forever?
Don't even ask me that question.
Oh.
Man alive, I just think I found my new online alter ego.
So all those messages that we're going to be getting to the Odd Job on social media feeds is just going to be you aggressively acting out his Texan alter ego online.
I have a strange desire to get out of this place in case Graham morphs into something and I end up having to
Yes,
making Bond great again.
Oh dear, there's some really bad hombres in there, definitely, for sure. Anyway, I think that feels like it's a good enough point to wrap up the pod, lest we go into areas which I think even we are finding mildly disturbing, and that's saying something given all the podcasts we've recorded on Bond in the past. But I think, yeah, to wrap up in there, there is a great level of villainry that we've just discussed, and then there's also Elliot Carver as well. We will be looking at another trope of villains there, but do we feel that we've completely covered the Ersatz Blofeld oeuvre, if you will, in there?
I think we've thrashed the shit out of it, personally.
I think we have. I mean, let's face it, these four guys have got nothing to offer us now, have they? I don't think. No. I think we've rinsed them for everything.
Let's move on to the next four.
Yeah.
That's
what I say.
Which is a wonderful way of saying the Odd Job Pod will return at some point. But for that, it remains for me to say, please do get in touch with your suggestions of Bond villains you'd have liked to have, or Bond actors you'd have liked to have seen play Bond villains or Bond henchmen or kind of Blofelds in there. I think, list on there could go for ages, and actually that gives some good hashtag engagement on social media, which obviously we're all about being a podcast. Other than that, it reminds me to say thank you very much to Terry and Graham for another rinsing the shit out of James Bond.
Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you, Gary.
And we will return at some point in the not too distant future. Goodbye.
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 Pathetic.